Good afternoon. I'd like to call the Transportation and Transit Policy Subcommittee to order. I'm Frank Hornstein, Chair. First item of business on the agenda is approval of the minutes. Representative Bortman, would you move the minutes today? Thank you. All in favor of the approval of the minutes from February 7th and January 31st, 2007, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. All opposed, no. The motion carries. We have three bills today. Our first is House File 539. Representative Junkie.
Mr. Chair.
Yes.
I'll move House File 539 be recommended to pass. And where's it go? Finance back to
the full
to our full committee, right?
Okay. Representative Leader moves passage of House File 539 and re-referral to the Transportation Finance Committee. Welcome to the committee, Representative Junkie.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. House File 539 is a very simple bill. It's two routes that are being turned back. The first one is in Wilmer, Minnesota, near Wilmer, Minnesota, Highway 40. A piece of that is being turned back by an industrial park so that it can be a contiguous. Anyway, the city's going to use it for contiguous industrial park. City and local units of government have already agreed to it. There's no money involved. We just, according to statute, do have to give approval for this. So it's a pretty relatively easy thing to do. Same way on the second one, that's Representative Gunther's turn back. Same situation, although here it states upon receiving approval, it'll be turned back, and there's also no money involved. So it's just two simple turnbacks, no dollars involved, and we just, as per statute, have to have the state's approval for that.
That's it. Thank you, Representative Junkie. Ms. Parker, did you want to comment at all? Welcome to the committee.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, I'm Betsy Parker from MnDOT. I don't think I need to comment. It's exactly as Representative Junkie said, and if you have any questions, I can try to answer.
So, Chair, we don't want her to complicate it at all. It's really easy right now. So,
members, any questions, comments, discussion?
And, Mr. Chair, I will. I thank you for hearing it, and Representative Leader, I implore you and others to move this as quickly as possible. There's a multi-million-dollar building project awaiting approval of this in Wilmer, and a large company making their decision on whether this turnback is granted. So this is pretty critical. We move this as rapidly as possible.
Thank you for that. That's noted. And
I don't want it in Earhart's bill.
We will do our best on that. Representative Earhart.
I have a question. Since Representative Junkie, what in the devil is a company waiting for a turnback to take place for?
Mr. Chair and Representative Earhart, it's a once it's turned back, the road area actually will become part of the industrial park that this company wants to use. And if it isn't granted, they are going elsewhere.
Is there anything like, Mr. Chairman, like this?
Representative,
you got room for the stadium up there now? If we,
Mr. Chair, we would take the stadium in Wilmer. We have no problem. 100% state funding.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay, well, nothing like a little stadium controversy to speak. Well, members, I think we can vote on this one now. All in favor of House File 539 as presented, the motion to pass and re-refer to the Transportation Finance Committee. All in favor signify by saying aye.
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 All opposed, no. The motion carries. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members.
And we will make every effort to expedite that bill, Representative Junkie. Okay, our second bill on the agenda is House File 676. Representative Ward is here, also with a few guests. And I believe, Representative Ward, you have a very simple amendment.
Yes, Mr. Chair.
So why don't we do this? I will move your bill and amendment. We'll get it in the shape that you'd like it, and then we'll go from there. So I will move the A70060 amendment to House File 676. Do you want to comment on this at all? First, welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Representative Ward. I'm here with House File 676. And yes, Mr. Chair, I will speak to the amendment to start with. The amendment simply takes out the ID cards out of the original bill's language so that the original bill only speaks to the driver's license. So it removes the ID cards.
Okay. And this is the Representative Ward and I spoke prior to the committee, and this is, in fact, the way he'd like the full bill presented. So on the A070060 amendment, members all in favor signify by saying aye. Aye. All opposed. The motion carries. And now we have before us House File 676, and I will move this bill also to pass and re-referral to the Transportation Finance Division.
As amended. As amended.
As amended, correct. So, with that, Representative Ward, welcome to the committee, and we'd like to hear more about your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. This also is a pretty simple bill from the standpoint of what we want to do. In Crow Wing County, where I represent in District 12A, because of drunk driving fatalities and serious injuries and costs, DWIRS, we have been put back on the top 13 counties in the state due to the number of DWIRS that we have had up there. I have with me today Mark Jordan, Kathy Jordan, and Diane Lodemeyer, who are going to testify to the purpose of the bill and the need of the bill. What the bill is asking to do is to, right now on the B card, on the driver's restricted card, no drink card, all that is indicated that a person needs to have on that is on the back of the card. Some very small print is the letters or the words no drink allowed, restricted no drink, no drinking allowed. And so this bill asked to, as we have changed the looks of all driver's licenses in the state of Minnesota, this bill asked to change a no drink, a B card to a red border. And a red border right now is also on the under 21-year-old card, and then the word restricted beyond the top of that, thereby identifying the B card as a no drink card. Is that way because oftentimes it's hard to pick it up when you go into an establishment, and if it isn't indicated like that. So that's the purpose of the bill, and I would like to turn the over to the testifiers. I know we're limited on time, so as to why the importance of this issue is being asked with the under House File 676.
Okay. Thank you. Why don't we do this, members? We'll take the testimony from the public, and then if there are questions either of the witnesses or of Representative Ward, then we can have those at that time. So Kathy and Mark Jordan, I have a who would like to go first, Kathy or? Okay, please, welcome to the committee, and please state your name for the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. My name is Kathy Jordan. Bear with me; I'm not a public speaker. Life, as we knew it, is gone forever. Our son is gone. It was 19 months ago last week, and I still can't believe it. I talked to him that night, and 9 minutes later, he was gone. I do not have the drive or the energy to go on with my career. I miss my son so much. He was the youngest of my boys. He was 16 years old. I can tell you the whole story, but time won't permit. I just want you to know that this is a hell that you will not know about or comprehend unless you live it, and I pray to God that you never do. My son was killed by a 25-year-old drunk driver. His blood alcohol was 0.29. This was his fourth DUI. People like this young man simply do not care. We will never know how many families we save from this nightmare when our mission is complete. However, we sit back and do nothing. We will know how many we did not save from this. My mission is to prevent this from happening to other families. I am not naive enough to think that I will prevent all of these horrific tragedies, but I want to save as many families as I can from this. Since people like this do not care, I want to prevent other people from enabling, whether it is intentional or otherwise. The start of my mission is to request that Minnesota driver's licenses and identification cards, well, that's been changed, but be a different color if there's an alcohol restriction on the license. When I deed in a liquor establishment, no matter what the age, the bartender or storekeeper can say, you cannot drink or buy here, and I will not pay a fine or go to jail for you. I find it interesting that I cannot find out the percentage of alcohol-related deaths or serious injuries that are caused by repeat offenders. I am guessing that 90% of alcohol-related deaths and serious injuries that we hear about in the news are caused by repeat offenders. There is so much attention on the sex offenders. I am not opposed to this, and I do not want to sound like I am against this. Drew Shadeen was a friend of my son. Erica Dahlquist was a friend of my daughter-in-law's. Not to mention that I have three granddaughters. My only thing is that I would like to see getting repeat offender DUI people off the street made a priority as well. I understand that there are some people who are opposed to labeling other people. I want these people easily identified. They are people who are killing and maiming our loved ones, our children, our parents, our brothers, our sisters, our parents, our friends. Our tragedy not only affected our lives, but it affected Joey's friends, classmates, our friends, and our community. I just want to say thank you for your time, and I beg you to make this law. This will only help protect our society. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you very much,
members.
Ms. Jordan, and we really appreciate the fact that you came such a long distance to tell your story. Thank you. And now Mark Jordan.
Yes. My name is Mark Jordan, and thank you for your time, Mr. Chairman and members. I'm going to take a moment just to give you a little of what happened. This fellow left a bar within, I believe it was about a mile and a half, and was on the wrong side of the road, and hit our 16-year-old son head-on and killed him instantly. He was a normal person at this bar every day. Okay, they had no way of knowing. I did not know that there was a restriction on the back of a driver's license card until one of my employees showed it to me, who had had prior DUIs. I didn't know it myself, and I've owned three bars in my career. I know many police don't even know it's there. And with it being on the back, no one looks at the back of an ID. This way, a guy like this would go into a bar. If they do ID him, which they hope they do, we'd love to see everyone ID'd. However, that may never happen. They would be restricted at that point. I understand that there's no law if they go ahead and serve him. But they are going to know then that they're not supposed to be in there. This is a very important thing because if you look in the history of repeat offenders, they're always drunk again at the time it happens. That's why they're there. And we're never going to be 100% to stop them? No. An example is the gentleman who was with him in the car was celebrating getting out of jail that day. Okay? The enablers, the bartenders, the family members that buy the alcohol, his father picked him up at the jail, took him to a liquor store, and bought him a six-pack of beer on the way home from this. They were celebrating him getting out of jail. This wasn't the driver. The driver of the vehicle, his fourth DUI, his mother had purchased the vehicle back from a sheriff's auction where it had been previously taken from him on his, I believe, third DUI. Licensed it, insured it in her name, and allowed him to drive it. When we talk enablers, that's the enablers that need to be stopped, the people that aid these folks. If you have any questions, I'd like to hear them, but thank you very much for your time, and I won't take up too much. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Jordan. And again, I also appreciate that you made the trip and share your story with us. We have one final testifier, Diane Lordermeyer. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. My name is Diana Lordermeyer, and I'm a program coordinator for Crow Wing County Victim Services. We are a community-based program committed to providing legal and personal advocacy to victims of 48-plus crime areas ranging from harassment to homicide. I've had the privilege of working with Mark and Kathy Jordan for the past 19 months. My role as an advocate has been to assist Joy's family and friends with the legal and personal issues related to this tragic and preventable crash. We have attended countless court hearings, county attorney meetings, city council meetings, etc., in those 19 months, and we haven't even made it to trial yet. The trial is not even scheduled due to appellate issues prior to going to trial. And so, as you can well imagine, there are many tough days, weeks, and months, and probably years ahead. I say years because if there is a conviction, and there are no guarantees of that, there will be plenty of appellate issues following a conviction. This is a passionate issue that can save lives. I challenge you, Mr. Chair and members, to protect our citizens from the pain that impaired driving causes. If we can prevent those who shouldn't drink from drinking, we can perhaps prevent impaired driving. I interviewed a bartender who had served an individual who was intoxicated. That person went on to kill two people. She said if she had known that he was on a no-drink court order, she wouldn't have served him. This bill can help bartenders and others have a legal reason to say no to those who are court-ordered not to drink. Again, thank you.
Thank you very much, Ms. Lordermeyer. Members, do you have any questions of any of the testifiers or the author of the bill? At this point, Representative Earhart.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm just curious about, apparently the courts can restrict somebody from consuming alcohol. Under what grounds? Can somebody give me a little background on that? Because the bill is marked who is restricted from consuming alcohol under Section 171.09. Counsel, can you tell me how that happens or whatever?
Mr. Burris.
Mr. Chair, Representative Earhart, that restriction is actually set up in state statute. It's Section 171.09, and it gives authority to the department to impose restrictions on consumption of alcohol as a requirement for receiving a driver's license.
Well, Mr. Chairman and Mr. Burris, does that have something to do with prior convictions, or how do you arrive at the point where the court says we're going to restrict you from consuming alcohol?
Mr. Burris?
Mr. Chair, Representative Earhart, it's not actually driven by the court. It's a determination that's made by the department. And I'm not sure from my reading of the statute whether that's on the basis of a specific number of prior convictions, but I do believe that that's in the intent.
Mr. Chairman, Mr. Bruce, that's an administrative application then of based on some prior history. Is that what we're saying? And it must go beyond the driving thing. They must say that you can't drink from whatever we're saying here, and that seems somehow to run contrary to, I'm in agreement that people who drink should not drive. The starters, but I don't know if you can declare somebody I just don't follow what is going on here.
Representative Portman, did you want to comment on
that? Thank you, Mr. Chair. I had a bill last year that was referred to the DWI task force over at the University of Minnesota, so I spent the summer going to some of their meetings and learning quite a bit about this, that driving is a privilege, not a right, and so the Department of Public Safety can impose conditions upon your exercise of that right. And my understanding is that somewhere in the rules, it indicates that after the third offense, that this is placed on the license. And you know, I would recommend that you think about going to the CWI task force meeting just once, because there's a wide variety of prosecutors and law enforcement and judges there that discuss how this actually works in day-to-day practice.
Representative Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd also like to ask Mr. Burris, and I understand it's at their third offense, but is that a permanent on the license fees, or if your license expires, do you get a, or is there a short term or a year or two, or do you get a new license? At what point, or is this a permanent designation?
Mr. Chair, Representative Leader, currently it's a permanent designation, and to jump back to Representative Earhart's question, it is a requirement of no drinking at all times that's placed on receiving the license.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I...
Representative Earhart.
Excuse me. Representative Leader, or you have something else?
Representative Earhart.
Somehow that doesn't strike me as something that should be in law. I'd understand if they can restrict you from driving while drinking, but to restrict you from drinking is another matter, and I think that that's what I'm getting at here. I mean, maybe it's not even within the realm of, you know, of this committee, but something seems goofy about that.
Well, Representative, I guess we're just going to focus on these cars.
Well, that's part of the bill, Mr. Chairman. And it's new language being, I don't know. It's referring to 171.09.
Right. I see that.
Okay.
Well, how about Representative Bendora and then Representative Leader?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think the intent would be drinking in public places, so I don't think we can actually legislate anything at the House. But what I'm wondering is how does this apply to restaurants? And are they required, if you order a drink at a restaurant, to check whether or not this license is valid and does it have this marker on it? So,
Representative Ward?
Well, that was part of the initial request that we had in this bill was, and I think Mr. Jordan talked about, having people check as they are in a bar or a restaurant anytime they order liquor. But in fact, that is not part of the bill. That is not something that we're asking for. But if they are checked, all we're asking for is that the driver's license be an indicator that they are on a no drink restriction. Right now, it's just on the back of all licenses right now in very small print, and it's not... It's not clearly visible at all. So, Representative Bendora, does that answer your question? If they get checked, then it's up to the establishment to check or not.
I guess that's where I was trying to follow what Representative Earhart was talking about, is where is this applicable, and how does that work? But, yeah, I have a little clearer understanding. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Leader, and then we'll go to Representative Severson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair, I just wondered, does this bill go to public safety after finance? Because they've been looking at the legal, whatever it would be, I think.
My understanding is that there were some discussions, but at this point, it would go to the floor. They didn't express an interest in seeing that. Representative Severson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I apologize for being late here. I guess one of the questions I have immediately is, I think whenever there's DWI and the driver gets his right to drive back, they get the special plate, the W plate, I think it is. And I'm wondering how, if there's any implication in terms of the driver's license that comes along with that plate. And maybe Mr. Burris can kind of enlighten us on that issue.
Thank you, Representative Severson. Mr. Burris. A busy guy today.
Mr. Chair, members, I'm sorry I couldn't actually enlighten you on that immediately, but it is something I could look into and get back to you on.
And Mr. Chair, and I'm just wondering if, you know, if this could be one of those deals that kind of triggers it, so that I think it'd probably help, particularly for law enforcement, if there was an issue of the individual being restricted from drinking alcohol, also driving with a W, would reinforce that, you know, if the policeman stops him and doesn't know if, in fact, that's the owner of the car. Well, just a thought. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Severson. Did you want to comment at all, Representative Ward, on that, or we'll move to the next question?
No. Okay. My understanding of the W license plate is that after a period of time, you get your normal license plate back, but if you have a restricted license, it's on there, and that you don't get the opportunity to have a regular license. That's my understanding.
Mr. Chair, I think to that point, I had a constituent ask me if there was some way that they could eradicate that from his record, and I think it may be after the second one. I can't recall. It would be good to get that kind of cleared up, I think, but my understanding was that you cannot expunge it from the record.
Well, thank you, Representative Severson. Maybe Mr. Burris can have a very short, something for the committee when this comes to the Transportation Finance Committee, if necessary. It seems like we've had a number of questions about that.
Mr. Chair, members, I can arrange for that.
Yeah, thanks.
Mr. Chair, I might.
And I have one more question.
Representative Weider asked, where does it go? Where would it go next? I think Representative Weider asked, where would it go next? And did I hear you correctly, Mr. Chair, that you said it would go to the floor?
No, it would go to Representative Leader's
full
committee, and then possibly to the floor after that.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Mr.
I have at least one more question from a committee member, and that would be Representative Root.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm just wondering if there is any enforcement on this. For example, if you come in a restaurant and they see that I have a card or whatever, and I still refuse what they say, is there any enforcement, and who is responsible for that?
Representative Ward. And the test can also answer this question. My understanding is that there is nothing against, it is not illegal to actually serve a person with no restriction, is that correct? And so the enforcement does become an issue. Again, we're just asking to make the restricted card more visible so that maybe we prevent some future tragedies. Thank you.
Thank you. I have actually a question for the author, and then, barring any further discussion, we'll vote on the bill. Representative Ward, have you had any conversations with the Department of Public Safety about this, and do they have any thoughts one way or the other?
Mr. Chair, members,
yeah.
When we drafted this language, the research and constituent services folks did talk to Department of Public Safety, and since they are redoing all licenses, they did not have any type of problem with this. They did say it would maybe a one-time fee of about $80,000 to have this happen. But they didn't. At that time, there was no problem with it.
Okay. I guess I would recommend, Representative Ward, maybe, assuming we move this bill out of the subcommittee, that we have some clarification from the Department of Public Safety in terms of their views on this, and if there is a cost, a fiscal note may be in order as well. Just some advice. Our committee, the larger transportation committee, does have jurisdiction over public safety and or at least the transportation, the driver and vehicle services, so it would be useful, I think, to get their perspective. Representative Earhart.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I was just toying with this, and I don't know 171.09, but if you had the phrase "is restricted from consuming alcohol while driving," that is what the intent of this thing is, I think. I don't know how you can, Representative Medora says, well, you're in a restaurant, they're going to tell you you can't be drinking in there. That's my problem is with this.
Mr. Chair?
If they go that far.
Representative Hortman.
After spending the summer with those prosecutors and cops and judges, it's not just about consuming alcohol while driving. It's talking about the when this determination is made that this should be on somebody's license, is that they have an addiction problem, and the restriction is either drug or alcohol, you know. And so if the person is using in a situation and they're not planning to drive, it still can revoke their driver's license, because this is a person that has demonstrated to the Department of Public Safety that if they drink, they, because of their addiction, are not able to control their actions in a manner that's safe for the public. So they're not, the restriction applies to in their living room. If there's some reason the police end up in their living room, they can begin revocation proceedings.
Well, Mr.
Representative Earhart,
if in fact your license has been revoked, for drinking, and you go to a restaurant without a license and order a drink, they're not going to ask you for a license because you don't have one. So something is goofy here. But I think maybe we can pass this on and get a hold of it before we get it out of Representative Leader's
Well, Representative Earhart, I think it's a very, Mr. Chair, is a much bigger question of how we deal with the alcohol restriction than what Representative Ward is looking at today. I think what Representative Ward is looking at today is the narrow part of what does the driver's license look like. And I think it does open up the bigger issue, and it's a bigger issue probably for Representative Mullery's committee, of how do we handle these things, you know, generally. But I think what we're dealing with as a transportation policy subcommittee is just, you know, the appearance of the driver's license today. I agree. It's a very complicated issue. We could and, in fact, did debate in the last session whether this should be a lifetime restriction. Is there some point in time at which you say somebody's rehabilitated, they've repaid their debt to society, they don't have this, you know, black mark that's publicly available for everybody to see who looks at their driver's license? But those are issues really for another bill and another committee, I believe.
Thank you. Representative Nelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I guess reading this thing that was just passed around here, it says on here that a person agrees in writing to get his license back. That's one of the requirements, is that he agrees in writing that he will not consume any alcohol or illicit drug. And if he does at that moment, his license is revoked. According to what this says, this is from House Research. But I guess I'm going down a question I have, and it's not addressed in the bill, and I know that would be problematic because currently most restaurants, they have an age limit where they say, if you look like you're under 30, we're going to card you, or 35 or 40, but so that they get most of the young people. And so they're not carding everybody when you're buying alcohol in a restaurant or at a bar. So, I mean, even if you don't do the light, even if you don't have that on the light, or you don't have a different type of license, they're not going to catch that. One of us, any one of us sitting here, except for maybe Representative Horton or Representative Ruth, might have that problem getting carded. But, as we go forward here, you said that once we add that on, that everybody has to be carded by a restaurant, we'd be in trouble. I mean, if people are going to slip through. And I think this is going to get at when they do card somebody that they have an identifiable mark on it or a different color it that makes it look different so that they look at more closely at it, because most people would just look at the date. They're not going to flip it over. I think that's what they're getting at here, is they're not going to flip it over and see the small print on the back. By having it like a somebody under 21's driver's license, that looks different enough that it'll make them take pause at it and say, oh, they're not supposed to be having any alcohol. So, I mean, I think this is a good bill. I think we should go forward with it.
Okay. Any further discussion on the bill? Seeing none, Representative... I made the motion. You made the motion on the bill before. I will renew my motion to pass House File 676 as amended and re-refer it to the full Transportation Finance Division. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. All opposed? The motion carries. The bill is passed, and its next stop will be the Transportation Finance Committee. Thank you, Representative Ward, and thank you to all of you from traveling so far up, from up north to be with us today. We really appreciated your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members.
Okay, we have one more bill today, and that is House File 667. And as Representative Simon is preparing to come up, I will move, I believe, an amendment. Is that correct, Representative Simon?
That's correct, Mr. Chair.
Okay, we have an A1 amendment in your packet, members, and I will move that. Any explanation of the amendment that is in order, Representative?
Yes, Mr. Chair, and you'll notice that in the amendment there is a blank space there, and that was as a result of some last-minute negotiating, but we've agreed in the space, after the numeral 1 and the dollar sign, it should be $25
million. 25.
So I don't know how you'd like to handle that, whether you want to adopt the amendment first and then add that.
Well, I mean, if you have a specific number that you would like to insert, we might as well do that. You know, sometimes one leaves these things blank. It's really up to you, Representative Simon, what you'd like to do.
Mr. Chair, I'd like to put $25 million in.
Okay. So, members, I guess a minor oral amendment to the amendment would be to insert $25 million on line 1.2 of the A1 amendment. So all in favor of that, we'll just vote on the oral amendment first, signify by saying aye, aye, all opposed.
Aye.
Aye.
And now we have before us the A1 amendment as amended. All in favor of that, signify by saying aye, aye,
aye,
all opposed. Motion carries. And now we have House File 667 in shape. So Representative Simon, welcome to the committee. We look forward to hearing your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. It's good to be back in the transportation.
Excuse me.
We have made a motion to move the bill. You just had the amendment. Don't you?
Oh, okay. Let's do that. Thank you very much, Representative Leader. Now that we have the bill as amended, I will now move that bill, House File 667, moving it to pass as amended with a re-referral to the Transportation Finance Committee. So now, Representative.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. It's good to be back in the transportation world. I was on this committee or a version of it last session. I'm no longer on it. So, but it's good to be back. And this bill is a sunshine bill, essentially. And this is the end process of a two-year collaboration with the Department of Transportation. And I'm proud and pleased to say that the department is supportive of this bill. And I want to thank Betsy Parker, who I think you'll hear from a little bit later, for her collaboration over these past couple of years. This began as a bill a couple of years ago, and there were some disagreements on it, but now I think we've completely agreed and crossed all the T's and dotted all the I's. Basically, as you know, each year MnDOT spends a lot of money on highways. We all know that. And MnDOT makes a lot of decisions about which projects live, which projects get delayed, which projects die. And that's okay. They ought to be making those decisions, not necessarily us. And I'm not arguing, I don't think anyone is, that we ought to substitute our judgment for theirs. They're the professionals, and we should leave it to them. But we, the people, the taxpayers, the citizens, should at least be able to press our noses up to the glass and see what's going on. And know a little bit more about why decisions are made and how they're made. And as you know, there are a lot of other reporting requirements now, and my intention was never to heap upon MnDOT yet another reporting requirement, some of which, of course, are required by federal law, others aren't, most notably the STIP and then the 10-year plan. But if you look at those two documents, particularly the STIP and the 10-year plan, they're comprehensive in many ways, but arguably not in ways that give us a lot of information. They are really statements of need and not necessarily statements of priority. And I think that's very important because sometimes those documents, as difficult as I'm sure they are to put together and as comprehensive as they are in scope, they don't always give all the necessary guidance to communities, to citizens, to taxpayers in terms of what's coming next and when. So after consulting with engineers, with city governments, and many others, including those seated next to me today, and of course dealing along the way with MnDOT, the consensus has been that more information is better, and that sunshine is a good thing. So this bill would basically require a modest report each year on basic information about where we've been, where we are, and where we're going when it comes to the most expensive highway projects. Only really the most expensive. And you'll see in a handout, and I just substituted what was the former handout for a newer one that I just got today, courtesy of Ms. Parker, which I appreciate, which gives you the list of projects that would even ever be included under the parameters of this bill. It's not lengthy. We're talking about two or three dozen projects maximum. These are the ones that reach a $10 million threshold in all non-metro transportation districts and $25 million in the metropolitan transportation district. And those would be the ones that would be prioritized and would come within the purview of this bill. So it's not everything. It's just those very few or relative few. And the reason I say it's a modest proposal is because the list is small. But for those of you wondering, well, okay, yeah, another report. Don't we already have this stuff? There's a sheet on the yellow paper, which I thought would be helpful for you, which is an analysis, sort of parsing in House File 667 the various reporting criteria or indicia, you might say, and then whether or not these two other documents reflect that information. You'll see that almost uniformly the answer is no, that they don't have those things in them, which is fine. We haven't requested that they be in there before that. But this is the kind of information that the bill requires and that these other documents don't give us right now. And so the idea here, again, is Sunshine is to give us more information. It only affects two or three dozen projects, so we're not asking MnDOT to really reinvent the wheel. But we are asking, and they have agreed, to come forward on a yearly basis on the very top, most expensive projects and give us a little bit of an idea about where they've been, where they are, and where they're going. The decision-making ought to reside with them. That's fine. But a little more information, I think, would help everyone. So let me just turn it over at this point to two people who have been instrumental in this effort and have certainly helped me and have been really loud and clear voices on this issue in general, transportation in general, but transportation transparency in particular. And let me just turn it over for some brief comments first to Margaret Donahoe of the Transportation Alliance.
Thank you, Representative Simon and Ms. Donahoe. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you. For the record, my name is Margaret Donahoe. I'm the Legislative Director for the Minnesota Transportation Alliance. And on behalf of the Alliance, we're very pleased to be here today in support of House File 667. We believe that this bill provides a common sense reporting requirement that will provide you, the legislators, with the kind of information that you need to know in your oversight capacity in dealing with transportation funding and in particular with MnDOT's budget and MnDOT's construction budget. We think it's important for legislators to know what's happening with specific projects and if projects are delayed, what those reasons are, and if there are delays because of a lack of funding, obviously that has implications for your job in putting together the funding bills that fund the department. One thing that I kind of brought along, following up on what Representative Simon said, are the kinds of documents that we have that deal with different projects. And one of the things that we kind of struggle with is how to track some of these things. This is the 2006 to 2008 SIF. This is the 2007 to 2009 SIF. And if you try and compare, you know, the projects in these two different SIFs and try and see, well, what's changed, it's not readily apparent unless you sit down and really compare these two very closely to see, for instance, the Devil's Triangle project is one that has gotten some media attention. There's been talk of shifting funds from that project to the Crosstown project, which would mean a delay in that project. And indeed, if you look at the 2006 to 2008 SIF, that project is listed under 2008. And if you look at the new SIF, it's listed under 2009. But unless you knew enough to look for that, you would have a hard time understanding that, looking at the new SIF, that that project timeline has indeed moved. All you would know is that the year that it's scheduled in. So we think it's important to have that kind of historical information about what's happening with projects. And I don't think it's necessarily very onerous or time-consuming or costly for the department to provide that kind of information. In fact, another report that I would highly recommend is a report that the department has put out every year since the 2003 bonding accelerated program was passed. included in the omnibus bill that year was a reporting requirement from the legislature that MnDOT each year provide an update on what's happening with these bond accelerated projects. And it has been a very good report, and it does a great job of explaining things like how advanced federal construction funding works and what's happening with the projects. And interestingly enough, one of the things that is listed in this report is the originally scheduled year for these projects. So obviously, you know, when these projects were originally scheduled is information the department has and they can readily provide. It's just one extra column in a report to kind of indicate to people that here's when it was originally scheduled and whether or not that schedule has changed. So we don't think, you know, that it would cost any money or provide a whole lot of work for MnDOT. This report that was required in 2003, there wasn't any additional funding provided to the department to do this. And like I said, they've done it every year starting in 2004, and it's been a really good report. And if you haven't taken a look at it, I would strongly recommend that you do. So again, we would like to go on record in support of this bill, and frankly, for our members, you know, we think that not just the major projects, but even some of the smaller projects are important to know if things are being delayed. For instance, Highway 19 project in the Marshall area was delayed for a year due to a lack of funding, and that's only a $2.5 million project. But for the people in that part of the state, you know, that's probably a pretty important project. And the fact that it's being pushed back for a year because of a lack of funding is something that we think legislators need to know. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Donahoe. Any? Well, let's hold off on questions. We'll have hear from Mr. Kershaw first. Welcome to the committee. Always great to hear from the Citizens League.
Thanks. Greetings, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. My name is Sean Kershaw. I'm the Executive Director of the Citizens League, and I'm here to testify on behalf of House File 667. If it's fair or not a cliche to say on Valentine's Day that we love this bill. You know more than I that not only is transportation a situation where the needs far exceed the available revenues, it's also a situation where transportation is competing with other important priorities like tax relief and health care and education. Citizens League believes that it's not just how much money is spent on transportation, but how that money is spent. And transparency and pricing are two critical tools that we have in transportation. We issued a report in January 2005 called Driving Blind. The number one conclusion from the study was that transparency must be applied to the financing and the decision-making processes for the construction and use of our road system. Specifically, the report said that unless more of the true costs of our transportation choices are revealed more directly to the end users, we'll make little headway towards solving our transportation challenges. We believe this bill, Representative Simon's legislation, is a step in this direction, making the cost of our major road projects and the rationale behind them and their prioritization available to citizens and the public in a way that people can grasp and that will improve transportation understanding of the changes that need to be made in general. Thanks.
Thank you, Mr. Kershaw. And we love the Citizens League. So. Questions of any of the testifiers or the author? Yes, Representative Ruth.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm just curious why 15 years. It seems like kind of a long time. Why not 10 years or 5 or why the report for 15 ensuing years?
Representative Ruth, is there some place that you're looking at in particular? Or?
Well, on the bill, on the first page, it says under construction plan, when your report and for the ensuing 15 years on line 110.
Right. Well, under construction or planned during the year of the report and for the ensuing 15 years. That's not that the reporting requirement is for the next 15 years. It's those that are planned for the next 15 years.
Okay, then, Mr. Chair, then how long is this just per year? Then how long are we looking at? Are we just looking at for each year or how long? What is this?
Mr. Chair.
Yes, Rip.
This would be an annual report every year that would deal with projects that are in the pipeline, so to speak, from the date of the report forward 15 years.
Okay, well, I guess that's still my question. if we want to set the legislature out that far, but I guess it's up to MnDOT, let's see. If that works.
This actually may be a good time if Ms. Parker has any comments or thoughts on the bill. I'd certainly welcome those. And after Ms. Parker makes the presentation, we'll hear from Representative Earhart. Unless you wanted to...
Well, I did want to, Mr. Chairman, kind of correct the Citizens League in that when we talk about money for transportation, we're not generally competing with health care and education, because that money comes from a dedicated source, the Highway User Trust Fund, which the money is a special tax on from the folks that use the system, the gas tax and the license tab fees. That's where your road money comes from, not general fund money that competes with health care and education and other general fund things. So I think you have from the Citizens League got to know that in case you didn't.
Okay, thank you. And Representative Leader, you had a question or comment.
I had a question I might want to ask. Maybe Ms. Parker would be the best one to answer that.
Okay, do you want to ask an hour after her presentation?
I don't know if she has comments.
I think she has some brief comments, and we'd certainly love to hear the agency's perspective on the bill. So maybe Ms. Parker can give her testimony, and then we'll call on you immediately, Representative Leader. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you. Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, I'm Betsy Parker from MnDOT. I don't really have a presentation, and my testimony is very short. It's just to say that we do support the bill. We've worked with Representative Simon on this, and we don't have any problem with anything that is in the bill, particularly with filling in the $25 million in the blank in the amendment. So we are comfortable with this. And with respect to the 15 years, we have the best information about projects out 10 years. But we are happy to provide whatever information we have about projects out to 15 years. We do plan, right now we have long-range district plans identifying projects out to 2030, which is considerably farther, although we have very little information out that far, but we don't think that the 15-year duration will be a problem. We will provide whatever information we have at that point.
Okay. Thank you, Ms. Parker. Let's hear first from Representative Leader and then Representative Houseman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair and Ms. Parker, in Subdivision 3, or Section 3 of Subdivision 2, I'm wondering if there's going to be a little bit of a problem with that, with the prioritization, because that changes annually, and once you lock that in, the public's going to say, well, you promised that. And I think this pretty much shows that it's gospel, and I recognize that you really can't identify a project that much except it's in your last 1 or 2 year plan rather than, and here you have prioritization, and I think that's going to create some problems with the general public thinking it's going to be that certain date, and I think it's correct to assume you don't have it that close within 3 years. You really can't prioritize and say it's going to be that hard and fast till we're down to about the 3 year limit. Wouldn't that be correct? And if you look at Section 3.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Leader, it is true that we do not now prioritize projects until we get to the State Transportation Improvement Program, 3 years. I think that the districts sometimes have an idea about the priority, about how projects will be moved along, and our 10-year work plan does have an expected date of construction in it. So to the extent that there is a year for construction in the 10-year work plan, I would say that that is a priority list. Now, there might be more than one project listed for a particular year, and I'm not sure how we would have to talk about how we would handle that in terms of priority. But in terms of assigning an anticipated year of construction, we do that out through the end of the 10-year plan right now. Beyond that, we just right now designate a group of years, for example, 08 to 12 or something like that. But I think that what Representative Simon is trying to get at and what people are concerned about is what is our expectation about how these projects will be lined up at any given time so that there can be discussion about that expectation.
Representative Simon.
Mr. Chair, thank you, and Representative Leader, and that's a legitimate concern because I think sometimes there just simply isn't a prioritization of any kind, I'm led to believe, which is why the phrase in there, if any, mm-hmm. which was part of what Ms. Parker and I had negotiated, and I think that's very fair because oftentimes there won't be a prioritization. And I think that helps both MnDOT in cases where, as we're hearing, there isn't a prioritization, and it helps communities too because sometimes you have, in my experience, at least in my district, there are communities that, whether they're right or wrong, believe or come to believe that they were promised something. And maybe they weren't. And maybe this is a way to make clear to those committees that they thought they heard that you were just around the corner or that your project was next or second to next, but really that's not the case. So even if there's no prioritization, in my opinion, that can be helpful as well. But that's why we put the language in there, because oftentimes MnDOT won't know what's first, second, or third yet, and I think that's fair.
Representative Leader.
Mr. Chair, my concern, again, is the fact that it's a false illusion for the public, and that's where we're getting all the trouble. I think everything you got in there is good, but I'm a little concerned, at least it's been my experience, that once you put a date down and it doesn't happen, you change priority. You got the public coming in and just in droves and say you promised that, and I can look at some of the members of the committee that met with me in the last not too long, come in and say they've been promised that and that and that, and it's going to be promised even in the future. So I think we're opening up a real area for the department to get more problems than they need. I don't object to anything you have in here, but I'm a little concerned about the false, in some degree, the public is accepting this and thinks it's going to happen, and it may not happen. Generally, it may not happen when you say it, except if you get down to that first year or two.
Representative Simon.
Mr. Chair and Representative Leader, I'd be happy to talk with you about that separately. I'd love to move this out of here, and then before it gets to your committee, I'd love to talk with you about your concerns, and if there's some language that we might be able to change, I'd certainly be open to that.
Representative Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair and Mr. Simon, I don't really want to, I'm just, actually, if the department's got a problem with it, it's going to be their problem, really. And I think you end up having a lot of public meetings just on that basis because somebody, some citizens group come in and said you promised it, and you're going to have a public hearing and say you changed the priority, and that's what I think we could avoid.
Representative Simon.
Mr. Chair, thanks. As one of the testifiers said previously, and I think that's a legitimate point, one could argue that we already have that issue right now in that the stiff changes and the days change, so it might not necessarily be a unique deal because we have that change in date now, so I suppose citizens are up in arms now anyway, so it might not add to that. It's just another report maybe confirming their disappointment in that situation.
Thank you. We have Representative Houseman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mine is just to clarify the language from 110 to 112. A project that has a total cost for all segments that the commissioner estimates at the time of the report to be. I am assuming we mean by that, though, the cost of the entire project over the course of the period of construction, and it wouldn't be, for example, if MnDOT is only going to construct 1 mile this year and 1 mile next year, that somehow technically that wouldn't be covered.
Representative Simon.
Thank you. Representative Houseman, my understanding is the same as yours. In other words, my understanding is it includes all segments, not chopping it up into parts.
Thank you. And Representative Portman had the next question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I didn't have a question, but I did want to speak to this bill. I'm a co-author of this bill, and I feel very strongly that we need something like this, particularly subdivision 2, subparagraph 3, explaining the reason why something might be delayed. I'm sorry, subdivision 4. Right now, I've spent the last 6 years in conversations with the public about how the Department of Transportation works. And I've been telling the public for 6 years that the way the department works is that they prioritize projects based upon data, crash statistics, number of vehicle miles traveled in that stretch, traffic patterns. And there have been a number of decisions made in recent years that make people start to think maybe politics is playing a role in which projects are moving forward and which aren't. And I think that it's probably helpful for the department, for its reputation, to have out there the reasons for the delay. I also think it's very important that the public sees if we have a number of projects that are being delayed for lack of funding, that they will then ask us to fund transportation more highly. And I want to create the unhappiness that Representative Leader wants to avoid, where people feel that something should happen on a certain timeline, and when it doesn't, they should know that the reason is we don't have enough money. And I think if we had a system like this in place from 1988 till now, I'm not sure that we would have gone 20 years without raising the gas tax, because the public would be more in tune with what am I paying for, what am I getting for what I'm paying for, and what do I really want, and maybe I'm willing to pay more. So I would just recommend to all committee members that you vote in favor of Representative Simon's bill, and I'm very proud that he's to be a co-author and very grateful that he's put the bill into the hopper.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Representative Portman. Any further discussion, members of the committee? Any final thoughts, Representative Simon, before we vote? Well, no.
We
do have one more question, Representative Earhart.
Since Representative Hortman just made a speech, I thought I'd say that we can prioritize the hell out of everything here, but if we're not going to vote the money to meet the priorities, it doesn't make any never mind. So you can tell the public that.
I'm with you, Representative Earhart.
Not a lot of dissent on that one. Representative Simon.
I just want to thank the committee for its time, and I appreciate your support and look forward to seeing you at the next stage.
Thank you, Representative Simon, and to the witnesses and to Ms. Parker. Thank you. I will renew our original motion to pass House File 667 as amended and re-refer to the Transportation Finance Division. All in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. All opposed, no. The motion carries. And your bill is on the way to Representative Leader's full Transportation Finance Committee. And with that, members, there are not any additional or further announcements or comments. We are adjourned.